Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. I love the beginning of the week. It's kind of like my Saturday, actually, but that's a long story. I have a rather screwed up week with the day job and some other things, and of course that's being constantly rearranged. So I hope you all had a good weekend. It's hard to, because of all the stuff that's going on. There's just an amazing amount of things that are happening, mostly because of the frauds in office of the people that stole our government. And this is what happens when people steal your government and you let them do it. Well, it's not that you personally let them do it, but the people that could do something about it are just sitting back going, oh, it's okay, we'll get them in 2022. Oh, it's okay, we'll get them in 2024. Now, there is no 2022. There is no 2024 unless there is a fix of 2020. And this we all know to be true just because of what's happening in California right now with the recall of one Gavin Newsom, nephew of one Nancy Pelosi. Big surprise there. Anyway, we got Gene who saved my butt on Friday because I didn't have internet because somebody outside was doing tree trimming and I think they cut some line, just like the people who did water the year before cut some line after Hurricane Sally, just like people the year before that who were installing whatever they were installing that cut another line. So about every year, somebody goes out and does this repair job in this junction box, you know, about 50 to 100 yards from my house, and my internet goes out. You know, it's never in here. Things in here work pretty well, but something happens out there. So, you know, that's Cicero's pebble in your shoe, as Michael Savage was fond of talking about. You know, I get a lot of my great quotes from great people that I haven't read yet because, you know, ADHD sort of limits my attention span to seconds at a time, which makes it very difficult for me to read long articles. I'll talk about that with my guest. In the second hour here, that's going to be Christian Elliott. Let me welcome Gene to the show. Good morning, Gene. What's going on? Oh, Gene, try again. We have more technical difficulties with this show. I'm sorry. It's just funny. It's funny because I turned my internet on. It wasn't working. I had to call Gene up and say, Gene, guess what? You get to do the show today. Why? Because I have no internet. What? Kind of went from there. So Jean's actually live, but I can't hear her. So she's going to frantically run around and try and do what I usually do when you can't hear me, which is trying to figure out what's going on. And so for the most part, we've got pretty much everything, you know, figured out here. So we actually were on the show together. I think it was Thursday. So everything worked Thursday. So we're going to try and reestablish that then. In the meantime, I'm going to talk to you for a bit, because we have a very special guest in the second hour, and that's going to be after our very special regular reporter, and that's Dr. Peter Pry, you know, at the bottom of the hour. And Dr. Pry, I'm sure we're going to talk about Afghanistan in detail again, because it really is dominating the news. I have a bunch of Facebook tweets, which I've mentioned, which I started posting over the weekend, and you can see how they evolve. So, you know, you look at the first one, you look at one the next day, and then you look at one several hours later, and I'm not going to read all of them, but my basic contention now is that, let me get noise outside too. Oh, this is great. So I get noise everywhere. This is going to be an interesting morning. What I believe now is that this is all being staged, that this is a completely planned operation. It's just not planned the way you think. It looks like chaos. They're using the excuse of stupidity and incompetence, and they're going with that, hoping you believe that these people are as stupid as incompetent as they are pretending to be. I don't believe that for a second. You don't rise that high in government by being a complete idiot. You rise that high in government by being a complete ideologue, being able to play an idiot. Okay. And so this is what's happening with the Blinken and I forget who's Secretary of Defense is. I don't know these people because they're so bad at their jobs. They're so insane. They're so driven by their ideology. You know, Mark Milktoast, the Joint Chiefs, general, who's more, I think one American News said, you know, he's more concerned with racism and fighting white supremacists than he is, you know, defeating the Taliban, which absolutely makes sense because that's where his stock and trade is. That's his sellout to the deep state. That's his selling of his soul in return for, you know, the prestige, the TV cameras, things like that. Something Dr. Fascist did a long time ago. So Dr. Fascist sold his soul, you know, to the devil in terms of he didn't care how many people he killed as long as he got rich. And that includes starting with AIDS victims. You know, he did a terrible job with AZT, which was pretty much useless unless it was mixed with a bunch of other things. Much like remdesivir is today, is useless as well, unless mixed with other things that actually do the job. But remdesivir is very expensive, and of course that's why Big Pharma wants to sell it. And Dr. Fascist, I'm sure, has a patent. I'm sure gets royalties. I'm sure has license fees, because that's where his real money is. So what we really need to do, Dr. Fascist, is confiscate all his wealth in civil asset forfeiture for crimes against humanity. That's the first thing I do. I leave him broke. I leave him penniless. I'd leave him without a pot to piss in, as they say, if I may be so graphic at this hour of the morning. I'd leave him with nothing. You know, I would take everything except the shirt on his back and turn him out of the street and give him back to his family and say, here, this is your problem, not ours. You know, well, then I'd throw him in jail. But I confiscate all his money, so take all the future inheritance, take all the future everything, you know, all the way down the line, because this man is pure evil. He's an absolute monster. And the thought suddenly occurred to me as I was listening to Freddie Mercury, you know, in Queen, you know, one of the greatest singers of all time who died tragically of AIDS. You know, did Dr. Fascist have a hand in killing Freddie Mercury? I don't know. I'm just asking, you know, was the push for AZT, which is as useless as remdesivir is for COVID, you know, as AZT was to AIDS, when there's a bunch of New York doctors had a much better drug, which worked a whole lot better. They did their own experimenting. They did their own research. They did their own drug trials, and they were very successful at curing AIDS. But of course, Dr. Fascist banned it because, you know, he wants Big Pharma to make all the money and himself. And so they don't care how many people they kill. Big Pharma's not about saving people. It's about making money. Okay. You know, and that's why they're pushing the vaccines on people that don't need them. What, 12-year-olds? Are you kidding? Are you insane? Vaccinating people who have a much higher survival rate than, I don't even like the term survival rate. Even that puts it, I'd like to see the rate of not even noticing. COVID probably has a rate of people, you know, kids, you know, 12 to 18 getting it and not noticing it, probably about 80%. You know, in other words, 80% of the kids who get COVID, if they're between 12 and 18, won't even know they have it. Okay. So that's the real thing is what is the not notice percentage? What is the percentage of people that, you know, think it's a 2-day cold? What is the percentage of, when they talk about survival, it looks like, oh God, I barely survived, you know, but the survival rate is 99.99%. So you got a pretty wide range in there. All right. Anyway, Gene's back. So let's try this again. And then I'll talk about my guest coming in the second hour. Gene, where'd you go again? Ah, Gene. So Gene's having, so today, like I say, Friday, Gene ran the show. I mean, she did a fabulous job. And I just wanted to comment on that. This is the beauty of having a producer. When everything goes wrong, you know, as long as things go wrong with one of us, then the other one can take over and do the show. In this case, my system seems to be running pretty well, knock on wood, or whatever this cardboard fiber in my desk is. I actually have a gavel, too. There we go. And this is, I have a new Gingrich gavel. You know, I should probably do that more often. It's kind of fun. Now that my desk is sort of trashed, so I don't have to worry about the surface of it. All right, let's try Gene one more time and see if my producer and aspiring co-host is here. Gene, are you there? Good morning.
Good morning. Is it working?
It is. I want you to get closer to the mic if you can. And we'll get your radio voice all in gear. So you got to get close and sound like you're on the radio. One more time.
I may have to turn the volume up.
Well, that'll work too. Yeah, that sounds better. Okay, there you go. So, yeah, if you have, for those of you who try to do podcasts and live radio broadcasts with your Yeti Blue microphones, I have found the volume in the vertical position or halfway, the gain at the 9 o'clock position or 25% seems to be, and of course the cartoid microphone, which only faces in one direction, the upside down heart, is the best setting for your Yeti Blue microphone if you have big booming voices. If you don't have as big a booming voice, I would just move the gain up until below where you start distorting, but high enough to get all the resonance of your voice coming through. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is your Radio 1-in-1 for today. Gene.
Yes.
Afghanistan. Overall thoughts, and I want to get specific. What do you think? Where
overall thoughts, in just a couple words, mess. Cover up. Mm-hmm. It's interesting.
Cover
what
up.
It's interesting what the media is saying that, uh-huh. Well, look at what Biden said last month, and then look what he's saying now. I believe what's happening, they knew exactly what's going to happen, and this is what they wanted. My thinking is, though, horrible because of what they did to, one, the people there that are still there, the people there that are Americans, and then also the people there that helped the soldiers, helped the civilians, mm-hmm. And now, you know, their life is pretty much, I don't even want to say over, but it's got to be a very horrible situation to be in, because the Taliban people, you know, they don't want them to live. And
so they're already being executed.
It's
worse than you think. They're being killed right now. I mean, it's
right,
ongoing.
Biden is, God knows what Biden is doing. And Kamala, the last I heard, she's in Vietnam, and I still don't know if she's there. But why are you in Vietnam? Why, to now learn what happened in Vietnam? So maybe they don't,
she wants to be Jane Fonda. She wants to be Jane Fonda. That's what she's doing there. Yeah.
When Biden gets kicked out, she needs to get kicked out as well.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it's horrible to think that all the resources they left there, all the military stuff they left there. And I know someone told me last week, they said, well, you know, the reason they do that is because it costs too much to get, you know, bring the tanks and everything back. And I get other information saying
you got a $10 million helicopter.
Right. And their stuff. So I don't know who's right, who's wrong. I've never been in the military, but I kind of believe the second person more than I believe the first person. But it's just sad. I can't imagine. We were there 20 years, how much money we put into it. And then Biden just pulls the troops in the middle of the night. He didn't even communicate with other countries.
Hmm. How about that?
I mean, are you kidding me? And, you know, Kamala can say, oh, I didn't have anything to do with it. That is BS.
Doesn't matter.
She's the second in command. She knows that he don't know what he's doing. It's like she talks, she walks in front of him all the time like she's the president. He says she's the president. Okay, then why does she let him take the fall?
Well, because she doesn't want the responsibility herself. See, these people want the power without the responsibility. Now, I interrupted you, so I want to go back a little bit. You said you had two people with two different thoughts. One said it was too expensive to get the stuff out. What did the other person say? I kind of stepped
on you there. The other person said that he was in the military, and he said that they don't leave their equipment behind.
Okay, so here's what's going on.
And so I don't know. I've never been in the military, but the thing is, They both know about the government and what's going on because they both are heavily involved. But the thing that gets me is I'm never going to know the truth, and the American people are never going to know the truth. But Biden,
I wouldn't say that.
Well, we haven't learned the truth up till this point in anything because it's always covered up, and we'll never. Who knows what's going to happen with the election results that are supposed to come out this week?
See, that's the interesting thing. Now, right before, I got Pianca on the show, so we're going to, why don't you talk to him real quick, and I'll sort of answer your question here on the air. But what Gene's talking about is really interesting. The idea, and this is where myths come from, the people that may not necessarily know the truth. What I want to talk to Gene about is not only, is using logic and reason, because that's what we do here more than anything else. So logic and reason. You know, is it logical that something would cost as much to transport from Afghanistan to the United States as it costs to develop it, build it, research it, test it, you know, try it all out? And the answer is no. I mean, does it cost as much to drive a car from Los Angeles to New York as it does to build the car? No, it doesn't. Okay, so you can use simple logic. So the idea of leaving stuff behind because it's more cost effective, that's insane. You leave stuff behind when you're leaving so fast you can't take it with you. Now, that was true in Saigon. You know, because literally the North Vietnamese were coming over the walls, the embassy walls of our sacred land there, which is American territory. Embassies are the territory of the country of which they are stationed. But we're going to talk a lot about myths, you know, and let me get in my guest here. So actually, let's just do the fun of it. Let me bring Gene. Are you able to screen calls today or no?
Hold on. I don't even know. Yes, I can.
Okay. Go ahead. I know who that caller is. In fact, I've already announced it. But go ahead, just to sort of, you know, we'll do our talk show thing. And I want to talk about a little bit. Let me sort of give a background on our guest because Shannon can't make it today. And so what we're going to do is I want to go over what Christian Elliott. You know, and I want to give you some of the background now, so when he shows up in, you know, at the top of the next hour, you know, you've already got the information. Christian Elliott is the one that wrote that incredible article called 18 Reasons I'm Not Taking the COVID Vaccine. Well, it's something to that effect. And it was incredibly well researched, and it was in such detail that I spent at least, I think, an hour on it. I might have even done more than that on this one article. But his research was so good, I was really intrigued. And so I get a hold of him and say, hey, Christian, let me tell you about Action Radio. And if you want to come on the show, then let's talk. And so he's going to come on. He's a blogger. He's a health nut. He wants to be a pilot. So I've already sent him, you know, one of my complete guide to flight instruction, you know, ads from Amazon. And so the best thing you do with Amazon is make money from them. So, you know, don't curse them, you know, take their money too. It's like I used to say, if you want to, you know, don't steal from your company. If you want to make money from them, you know, work for them. That's the best way to take their money. All right. Anyway, but the point being, he's a really interesting person and he just has all kinds of good advice for us. A lot of which is kind of like off the air chat, but I'm hoping maybe just maybe he'll do a story on us because that will start the ball rolling and people will go, huh, Action Radio. Because what's going on in this country right now is there is a huge gap. There's like two populations. And he writes about this in several articles. There are those who are living their lives out of fear who will believe anything. They'll believe any talking point. You know, they're scared to death. They're taking the vaccine. They believe that, you know, COVID's going to kill them. That if they don't take the vaccine, they're just going to drop right dead. And the vaccine is 100% effective, and they'll be safe from everything. You know, typhoid, you know, polio, doesn't matter. That vaccine is going to save you from everything. Okay, those folks are living in fear. And fear, I actually wrote this down here. Jackie, I will get to you. I wrote two quotes down. You know, assumptions are stronger than truth, and fear can make you believe anything. So the two populations are the fearful, who will believe anything, and those of us who use truth. And truth, you know, is the best way to go because, and I wrote this down somewhere, I can't wait. This is what happens when I write too much down. Basically, if you're led by fear, you'll believe anything. If you're led by fear, you'll never get to truth. And if you're led by truth, then there's nothing to fear. Okay, so that kind of sums it up. So let me try that again. If your life is led by fear, you will never find the truth. And if your life is led by truth, you know, then there's nothing to be afraid of. And I think that kind of makes sense. Piaki, what do you think so far, sir? Good morning.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
It's Monday. I'm ready to go. We got another fun, exciting week of tragedy, comedy. You know, unfortunately, it's real. That's the problem. But, yeah, we'll do what we can, and then we'll advance our bills. Yeah.
So, I think that Joe Biden was trying to do another Burisma there in Afghanistan.
Okay.
With
see,
all,
yeah, I think
all in gas in the Caspian Sea,
mm-hmm.
and on the pretense to run a pipeline through Afghanistan. And, you know, if he has took to Donald Trump's exit date, which was the 10 years and a day commitment between the enemy and the Taliban per mm-hmm. Islamic law, everything would have worked out fine. But no, he changed that.
Well, it wasn't designed to work out for
him. He had to go.
Yeah. Now, this was designed to work out for the Taliban. It was designed to work out for Obama. It was designed to work out for China. It was designed to work out for the military contractors who build the stuff. It was designed to work out for the permanent war class. It was not designed to work out for the soldiers. It was not designed to work out for the people who are in Afghanistan. They don't care about them. Obviously, if our government cared about the soldiers, we wouldn't have so many returning injured and killed. It was just absolutely, you know, horrible, horrible deaths and horrible injuries that for the rest of their lives. They don't care about the American people because they stole an election and gave us a fraud government. So they don't care about our health because they're giving a false vaccine, you know, which doesn't do it, you know, which doesn't work as intended, and is basically for a virus that died out 8 months ago. So the lies, the hypocrisy, the absolute arrogance of these people, that they don't give a damn about anything. I mean, you know, Biden, you know, the thief in chief, the fraud is on vacation, and Kamala Harris is in Vietnam. What is she probably shopping in the markets? You know, the party girl. You can't run a country with a senile old man and a party girl. It just and the people are letting this happen. They're just letting it happen every day. They you know, the geldings wake up and say, let's let Biden stay here another day. I won't do anything about it. Yeah.
Well, yeah, you know, we talk about the Taliban in 2001, 2011, that first 10-year in a day ended and extended it out another 10-year in one day, which would have ended with this past May.
What's the 10-year in a day thing? The Secretary mentioned it. I think I missed it the first time. So explain. How does that work again?
Well, according to Islamic law, that if you're going to have a commitment with an enemy, it has to be 10 years and a day.
Commitment, as in a treaty
Taliban
in a war?
You're
talking about a treaty commitment or a war commitment?
Well, it's not. It's sort of like a treaty, but then again, it's not. The Taliban is not a government. They are warlords.
Mm-hmm.
and they control the provinces that a pipeline would have to run through. So you'd have to have several negotiations with different warlords rather than just dealing with one president of the country.
Yeah, I've heard about this pipeline before. Do you know where it goes and who's on either end of it?
Well, it comes from the sea to Pakistan, then Afghanistan, through Pakistan, then through the Arabian Sea.
It's
if it
was to
be put in, I don't know if it's clear.
Gene, you have a comment?
So with Burisma and Hunter Biden with Ukraine, well, I guess he's got a taste for one more time. I guess you could call it that.
Yeah. Gene, you mentioned something?
Yeah, does it start in Russia, or was Russia just involved in that? Because it's interesting now that OPEC refused Biden's asking of more gas in this country, which we shouldn't need if you went to shut down the one pipeline.
What a surprise.
Yeah, exactly. So that means gas prices, not even to the fact that they've already risen quite a bit since last year, are likely to even go higher.
Mm-hmm. Plus inflation.
Yes.
Yeah, that gas and oil would have went to Europe. It wouldn't have came to the United States. If it had went the other way, going through the Black Sea, well, you got Russia to contend with. Then you got Iran. You got Turkestan. So that there's a big hot item. It's a big deposit of oil and natural gas there in the Caspian.
Yeah. Hey, Gene, can you pull up a map, a world map? And trace a line. So you want to focus in on the Caspian Sea, which is actually a lake, just like the Black Sea. That's a lake too, but they're big enough. They call them seas. A line from the Caspian Sea to the Arabian Sea. Where's that, Bianchi? You're talking about the Red Sea?
The Arabian Sea is right below Pakistan.
So I'm just, what's below Pakistan is India. So you're talking about the Indian Ocean, or are you talking about? I'm just trying to visualize world map, which I'm fairly good. Let's figure it out. Let's look at it, because I'm thinking like the Gulf between Saudi Arabia and who's on the other side there?
Okay.
Iran. I think Iran's on the other side. Yeah. So I'm thinking about, so Caspian Sea to Arabian Sea. Let's see. Arabian Sea doesn't sound familiar. That's why I'm kind of curious. But it's probably a Russian pipeline. I've heard about this pipeline. See, this makes perfect sense. So Burisma is the energy company, the natural gas company that Hunter Biden was given, money for. So it's basically, and that's the Ukraine corruption. So they blame Trump for Ukraine corruption to cover up the Biden family, basically the political mafia family that they are. Now it makes sense that China wants in on this too, but China wants the minerals. Apparently Afghanistan is just fabulously wealthy, all kinds of rare earth metals and things like that. Oop, got background noise. Who's got a moving truck outside their window?
Yeah, China would love to get the oil and gas also.
Yeah, that's true. All right, hold on, Bianchi. Gene, what do you got? What are our countries here?
So the Caspian Sea is surrounded by Russia, Iran. I can't read the one.
Kazakhstan?
Turkmenistan, yep. And then there's a little one I can't read.
Uzbekistan?
That's in there. Yes, yep.
Okay.
And so it's Russia
mainly. I'm just guessing. I'm just thinking of the Stan countries I know.
It's Russia and Iran mainly. And then.
Where does it go, though?
Well, basically, it's encapsulated by those countries. And then you go farther south, down below Iran, and then by Pakistan. Let's see, let me go. Pakistan. I have to pull up another map because my country is cut off then. South of Iran and Pakistan, south of those countries, that's where the Arabian Sea is. So Iran is the middle point. They're below the Caspian Sea, but then the Arabian Sea is
located Afghanistan, Gene. After you come out of Turkestan, you go through Afghanistan, then Pakistan, then to the Arabian Sea.
I thought Pakistan was above India. I guess it's beside it. Or maybe it's on the other. Anyway, I'm trying to visualize this. Because I know on our world map, we've got India and you've got countries that don't show up on that. But we're listened to by Pakistan. Actually, Pakistan just dropped off, but Afghanistan and Iran are still on our world maps for folks listening. So Afghanistan, there's people in Afghanistan listening to us. You know, maybe not many at this point, but somebody is. And so
So Saudi Arabia is by the Arabian Sea as well.
All right, so Iran's on one side, Saudi Arabia's on the other side. So that's where the Straits of Hormuz and the Suez Canal at the top of that, which leads to the Mediterranean. So this is key strategic point. Well, Afghanistan is the crossroads of trade from the ancient world. You know, it always has been. And this is why everybody wants to try and conquer it, but you got a bunch of warlords running the place and have been since post-biblical times and only just. So that's how old it is. So the weapons have changed, but the people are still the same. And you know who's really doing horribly is women. You know, where are the feminists that are screaming against Biden? Because there are more women being killed right now. This journalist who was very popular, absolutely gorgeous, and was immediately killed by the Taliban. I mean, she's already gone, which is incredibly sad that they would do this. I still think that this was all planned, that there was Obama operation to give weapons to his friends in the Taliban, just like the Muslim Brotherhood, just like Iran, just like every other Muslim country he supports, because he is pure Muslim and always has been. I believe that, you know, because everything he does says so. I haven't seen him do a decent Christian thing yet. I also think that Biden has completely sold out to China. So it makes sense that China would be brought in to get to either to help this pipeline or Russia as well to get this, because he sold out to Russia and Ukraine as well. So Biden wants the money. Obama wants the power. He wants to help his friends. And between the two of them, they totally screwed up this country because neither one of them gives a damn about us. You know, Biden wants the money and Obama wants to screw this country over. So we'll take our rightful place subservient to all the other nations, you know, because he can't stand freedom. You know, which is why he never should have been president. But quite frankly, I don't think he was born here anyway. So he was never eligible to be president. Well, let's get really controversial here. So I think, and I wonder what you folks think, that both China and the Taliban and Russia were tipped off by Biden that this is exactly what's going to happen. He's going to pull out the military and say, you got 24 hours, you know, and then we're going to go public. And that and what happened in the meantime is the Taliban took over so fast. They knew exactly where to go. They were probably tipped off a month ago. They knew where to go. They knew what to do. They knew when we were going to pull out. And so the only way that something like this could happen, because they would have spent at least a day, you know, talking to themselves, what the hell just happened? What, the U.S. military, where are they? Well, not here. Well, if they're here, let's find out. So they would have at least a day or two of intelligence gathering. They didn't do that. You know, the instant the military pulled out, they were there, which means they had to know the plans in advance. Which means this is all staged, and this is a crime against the United States. It's a crime against the world, a crime against humanity, and it's going to set us back decades. But this is what you get when you let the deep state and the permanent war class steal your government. And this is what happens when the geldings that could do something about it don't. They just sit there, you know, little castrados that they are, and refuse to do anything. That's where we are. Who wants in on that?
That's just the way things are. And you're right, between India and Afghanistan, there's another little country I can't make out what it would be. You know, when the USS, when the Soviet Union broke up, it created mm-hmm. all these little bitty countries that you mm-hmm. have what you have. But I'm saying it's about the oil and gas and the Caspian Sea.
Okay, so you got two pipelines. You got the one that Russia just got from Biden's gift, you know, to Europe. So it's Russia to Germany. We know that's one that never should have been okayed. Biden shut off our pipeline, but the real problem is not just the pipeline that was shut off, because we look back our noise. So we can get that out of there.
Yeah, hold on. That's my air conditioner. Let me go turn it
on. Oh, okay. Well, at least we know where it is. I know you want to sit by the air conditioner because it's summertime. See, live radio. This is how we find out things, you know. But you've got that pipeline from Russia to Germany going through Europe there, and you've also, it looks like we have the second pipeline going from Russia, you know, to through Afghanistan and Iran, you know, into the Arabian Sea. We got all these different places that have all this oil. This makes perfect sense, you know. So, but the real danger to us with our oil is not so much the pipeline, because we got along without the Keystone Pipeline before. That would bring a lot of new oil. Okay, the real danger to our energy system is the refusal of the Biden insurrection and coup to let private companies drill on federal land. See, the federal government owns so much land. You know, 70% of Nevada is federal controlled, and that's completely unconstitutional. They have all this land, and yet they regulate who gets to drill on it. Well, they've taken all the oil and gas leases off federal land, so we can't. It's like taking, you know, all this stuff off the market. It's like if they took the highway system and took 2/3 of it and said you can't use it anymore. And what would that do to traffic? Well, that's what's happening with energy right now. They've taken out all the federal leases on federal land that really shouldn't be federal land. All right, got Dr. Peter Pryor on the line here. Jeannie, want to go for it? And I'm going to stop telling Jeannie to do this because she's such a new producer here. I just want to make sure that happens. I'm going to play his theme, and we're going to get to it. Pianca,
look,
you have one last
call back in because I like being interviewed by Jeannie. It's fun.
Okay, so that's what we're going to do. All right, so yeah, feel free. And we have a great guest at the top of the hour, Christian Elliott, the one I'm talking about, the blogger, the marketer, the all-purpose, all kinds of different things person. And so we'll take that. And while Gene's talking to Dr. Pryor, I'm going to play his theme. And then let's see what we get going here. Yeah, Pianki, feel free. Call back anytime, which he does. Like 2 or 3 times a show sometimes. It's really funny. I should have had this all up here in advance, but I didn't. So let's play it now, and then we'll get Dr. Pryor on. What is national security? How much is enough? What about the cost? What are our adversaries doing? Who wins between the State Department and the Pentagon? How accurate is our intelligence capability? Are we keeping up with our nuclear deterrent? Do we have better weapons than our adversaries? How would we know? Can we withstand an EMP attack? How is our missile defense? How about the basic power grid? Is it safe? These are the questions Dr. Pryor has been dealing with his whole career. Dr. Peter Vincent Pryor is the Executive Director of the Task Force on National and Homeland Security. He has served on the Congressional EMP Commission, the Congressional Strategic Posture Commission, the House Armed Services Committee, and the CIA. He is the author of The Power and the Light, the Congressional EMP Commission's War to Save America. And now he anchors the National Security Report here on Action Radio. How much national security is enough? And now, Dr. Peter Vincent Pryor. We have so much to talk about on Afghanistan, but just thinking of national security, you know, they say that the intelligence failed, that they didn't know that if they pulled out the military, the Taliban would take over. I don't know if you want to start there, if you want to go to another topic, but that to me seems the biggest of many whoppers that are being told by the Biden coup at this point. Good morning, sir. Am I on the right track here?
Morning.
What's going on? Yeah.
Well, I'd like to talk to I can address that,
okay.
You know, speak to that. But I'd like to talk about other national security issues that are sort of being neglected in the shadow of Afghanistan and look at the okay. larger picture, you know, because I'm sure that from other guests and from yourself that, you know, you've talked a great deal about what's going wrong with Afghanistan.
Yeah.
Had Afghanistan not happened, you know, what would be in the headlines right now is the fact that Iran is enriching uranium to 60%, and is making uranium metal, you know, which has no other purpose except to make atomic bombs, and they've been doing that for some weeks, but other mm-hmm. issues have been driving it off the front pages, and the newspapers, the mainstream press, because they're ignorant of science. You know, keep saying that because Iran is enriching to 60%, that's almost weapons grade, which is 90%. Okay, but what they don't say, and because they don't know, that you actually can make an atomic bomb with uranium that's enriched to less than 60%. You just need to pack more material into the core, and it wouldn't be as good, it wouldn't work as well, and it's not as efficient as uranium to 90%. But in effect, Iran has already crossed the threshold at 60%, where they're capable of making atomic bombs, you know, based on the amount of enrichment that they're doing right now, mm-hmm. and the fact that they're making converting the stuff into metal. You know, which even the IAEA, which is always the last to raise warnings of this sort, has warned there is no other purpose in doing that except to make atomic weapons. Now, your audience will know, because we've talked about this before, that I am among those who think Iran has had the bomb for quite some time, and that they, you know, because they demonstrated all the capabilities to do this back before 2003, including and testing an implosion device, and that I think Iran is like North Korea, where you have an overt nuclear program that allegedly is for nuclear power, and a covert nuclear program that is for making nuclear weapons. And we don't see the covert program, but and so all of our estimates are based on what we see in the fake above ground nuclear power program. So Iran is, you know, so why is Iran doing this? You know, I think that they're doing this for to panic the Biden administration into giving them billions of dollars again to try to buy them off, you know, even though they've almost certainly got a clandestine nuclear weapons program and have got clandestine missiles, you know, capable of launching them, which they have actually shown us on television on occasion, these missiles that are underground caverns, you know, that you know, they can remove a lid and fire the thing from these underground tunnels. So that's one of the big news. The other thing that isn't getting out to the American hinterlands is the Department of Defense has announced that we apparently have developed, according to General Hyten, who is the number two guy in the Joint Chiefs of Staff, that America has developed some kind of secret satellite capability that would be very consequential in terms of protecting our satellite assets, protecting the United States. And Hyten has been pushing for us to overtly demonstrate this capability, which has been kept hidden from the American people up to this point and from the whole world. Allegedly.
That's what I was wondering. Was it hidden from China and Russia, or have they been, or did they steal it and know about it?
They've probably known about it all along. But what it is, the Pentagon hasn't said yet, and there's still an ongoing enormous debate within the Pentagon about whether they should come out of the closet with this thing. And I think that this is, in part, responding to Afghanistan. You know. You know, because the Pentagon wants to demonstrate, the administration wants to demonstrate that they can do something right, you know, high competency to try to
show
something they've done. You know, I'm almost certain that this is not what it is, but what I would love it to be is the Strategic Defense Initiative, you know, that Trump started, you know, a satellite that's capable of shooting down adversary nuclear missiles, you know, which would change the whole strategic environment in which we operate, where the aggressor has the advantage. He who shoots first wins, okay?
Right.
Now, I'm virtually certain that that is not the case because, you know, Trump encountered so much resistance to that from within the Pentagon and from within the State Department, and we haven't seen any demonstrations that, of course, possibly they could. Is it possible they could have hit it? It's also possible that you don't need to demonstrate it. They could have fielded something like Brilliant Pebbles, you know, where component testing would have been good enough. It's probably going to be something a lot less impressive. You know, none of the newspapers are talking about an anti-missile capability for this. That's just strictly for me. That's my own speculation. That's what I would love to see. But, well, we don't know, but it's probably going to be, the speculation is that it's going to be not an anti-missile, but demonstrate to the Chinese and the Russians that we too have an anti-satellite capability so that we could shoot down their satellites. Might be a robot, you know, that's equipped with these mechanical arms that can go over and attack their satellites. It might have a conventional weapon equivalent to carrying a shotgun, you know, so that it could fire pellets at another satellite and destroy it. It might have, you know, radio frequency capabilities inside of it so that it can use a non-nuclear EMP to target an adversary satellite and take that satellite out. The State Department hates all of this, you know, because they've been pushing international space norms. Okay, they don't want, and they're saying, oh, but this will ruin all of our attempted negotiations, which they've been trying to do for 30 years to convince the Russians and everybody else to not weaponize space. Okay, by putting satellites into space that can attack other satellites. Or, and that's one of the things, frankly, that's been an obstacle to the realization of Reagan's Strategic Defense Initiative, you know, because, oh, that's weaponizing space too. You know, even though it would be saving cities and saving the millions of people's lives, the State Department hates it because it's weaponizing space. And they want, the norms for space military technology should be spy satellites, basically communication satellites, and things that support, you know, our conventional and nuclear capabilities in terms of being able to prosecute conventional and nuclear wars, you know, through things like GPS satellites, which enable you to have, you know, very accurate conventional or nuclear weapons. You know, that's all of that is okay in terms of what they would regard as the norms. But satellites that are designed to attack other satellites or that are designed to attack missiles, you know, so that you're putting an offensive, even though it would be defensive in the case of a strategic defense initiative capability, the State Department wants off limits. And, you know, it's, again, this idealistic thing for state to try to establish international norms that everybody is pursuing. But this is an interesting, you know, what is this? Obviously because we're so focused on Afghanistan, and maybe the reason that this is coming out now is because the Biden administration, the Pentagon want to win. You know, they want to show the American people they're not entirely incompetent.
So they lost so they could show a win? Let me just jump in here for a second because I have to apologize to you because we have a guest at 8 o'clock top of the hour and I forgot to tell you about that. So I want to do minimal questions.
Sure.
So let me just ask, that's the first one is did they lose in order to prove that they could win? But here's something I think that I want to know about the physics of space weapons, because you're a physicist. Do we have the physics down? Because you're operating without gravity. You're operating in space. There's different, you know, we know how ballistics work, you know, in the gravity field. But out in space, it's an entirely different thing. Have we figured out how to operate in a zero gravity environment and shoot weapons?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I'd be amazed if we didn't
okay.
have that capability. And we've been able to learn that just from looking at what the Russians and the Chinese have done. Because
okay.
they haven't been following or respecting any of these so-called international norms that the State Department wants to impose, you know, on everybody. All of the missile systems except an anti-missile system, okay, but all of the military-type satellites that I described earlier, the Chinese and Russians already have them. You know, these are the ones that the State Department doesn't want us to develop equivalents to, you know, and so you, just by watching their programs, and these are pretty simple things, you know, technologically to do, but it's going to be interesting to see if they actually go forward and, you know, it's sort of out of the closet now that we do have, you know, space capabilities that have been kept secret, at least from us, from the American people. You know, I think the Russians and Chinese probably know all about them. But going back to the other issue of Afghanistan and the intelligence failure, you know, I don't know if you probably in your audience, you know, probably saw Tucker Carlson's interview with Laura Logan that talked about, you know, how there couldn't have been an intelligence failure in Afghanistan because the NSA knows everything and all of that. And I like Laura Logan and I respect Laura Logan and Tucker Carlson, but this is the typical journalist. I mean, this is the typical view of a smart journalist who's never actually worked in the intelligence community herself. Okay. You know, I was just pretty appalled at that, you know, with that. You know, I think what you see is what you get. Our intelligence community is entirely capable and has committed long strings of huge intelligence failures. In fact, I just put together a little list of them yesterday for a friend for another topic that they were working in on. You know, some Duke University professor recently published an article in Foreign Policy, you know, that claims that the intelligence community consistently exaggerates adversary threats and gets it wrong in that direction, that the intelligence community is always hyping adversary threats and that's a mistake. And I think that the record is very, in terms of the biggest issues, is actually just the opposite direction.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
just
going
just
back
the opposite,
to the beginning of the Cold War, when, you know, they didn't foresee the Soviet Union getting the atomic bomb. You know, the Soviets tested an A-bomb 10 years before they thought that they would have one. They didn't foresee the Korean War. They were taken completely by surprise, you know, by the invasion of Korea. You know, they didn't foresee the Tet Offensive in Vietnam. They thought that we were winning. And up until 1968, you know, their view was, oh, we're winning. And that was the official view as well as the unofficial view. They didn't foresee that we were going to lose the Vietnam War, you know, just like they didn't foresee, you know, what was happening in Afghanistan.
They missed 9/11.
The Soviets actually,
they missed that one completely.
Right. Soviets actually beat us to the hydrogen bomb, a weaponized hydrogen bomb. We tested a hydrogen bomb before they did, but the bomb, but the device that was tested by Edward Teller, you know, was not a practical weapon. It was too big and too heavy to be delivered. And the next year, just 1 year after we tested, they tested an actual bomb. So they beat us to the bomb, they beat us to the ICBM, they beat us to the satellite, and we didn't see any of that stuff coming.
Yeah,
and that's just the early Cold War, you know.
Yeah.
You know, but there's a long list of things. You know, Saddam Hussein and the first Persian Gulf War was 6 months from the atomic bomb. We didn't know that. And we didn't know that until we actually, you know, discovered the project and dismantled it during the first Persian Gulf War, which is why during the second Persian Gulf War, they did get it wrong, and they had an exaggerated view of Saddam's, possibly an exaggerated view of Saddam's atomic bomb program, because he was so close to it the first time, they thought that he had reconstructed it and was probably going to be close to it again. And maybe he was. You know, Iraq is a big place. Just because we had people on the ground in there afterwards looking for weapons of mass destruction, you know, that doesn't mean our people were competent enough to find them. You know, I know some of the people who were assigned, you know, to this. We don't have a culture in this, in our own strategic community, that's very good at hiding things, you know, and the bad guys usually do. One of the people who was on the ground in Iraq after the second Persian Gulf War was a friend of mine, a young lady who I have a great deal of respect for, you know, but she was trained. She was a classics scholar and knew ancient Greece and ancient Greek. And, you know, she wasn't an intelligence person, you know, but somehow she got involved in that. And, you know, Iraq is a big place. We might, there might still be buried out there in the desert, you know, the remnants of their second atomic program. But anyway,
I got a question on atomic programs, because you talked about Iran as having both the domestic nuclear energy part and the weapons part, the covert part. Is it a pretty good indicator if a nation has a domestic energy nuclear program that they probably got a covert military weapons program? I mean, can you have one without the other? I mean, in other words, can you have a weapons program without a domestic energy program to create the uranium and the enriched uranium, which is, if I remember, it's U-239. It's an isotope of the more stable, naturally occurring U-238. And enriching just means the percentage of 239 that's in there, and you need that for the weapons grade. Do you need does the weapons program have to have, or is it much easier, much more practical to have a domestic energy program, nuclear energy, to sort of add as a cover to that? Or can you do a weapons program without one? Just do the entire thing in secret?
You could do you could do a weapons program without one and have the whole thing in secret.
Okay.
You know, a good example of that was in the Soviet Union. You know, the Krasnoyarsk-26 was a underground nuclear reactor that was purely for military purposes because they didn't want us to know how much uranium and plutonium they were manufacturing, you know, from the overt sources, so that they could build a lot more weapons than we thought, you know, that they had. So you can have a completely clandestine nuclear weapons program. But as a practical matter, there are advantages to having an overt and then a covert program. And in the case of Iran, you know, which doesn't need nuclear energy, you know, for any practical purpose, they're oil rich, you know, it should always have been obvious to everybody that their interest in these nuclear reactors, you know, was because of a nuclear weapons program. And there's a lot of practical things you can learn, you know, from the overt. I mean, you can learn these things clandestinely too, you know, but as a practical matter, instead of trying to hide everything underground, that the existence of the overt program. Well, look at what Iran has gotten away with, right? You know, it just makes no sense for them to have a nuclear power program at all. But we in the West are such strategic optimists, you know. We've got the whole State Department and a lot of the international community convinced that, well, maybe they don't want the bomb. Maybe they're sincere about, you know, it creates sufficient ambiguity in our ranks and discord and disagreement in our ranks, you know, so that everybody isn't on the same page, you know, about, well, this is obviously a nuclear weapons program. It creates enough cover, you know, so that it by going overt like that. And
they just reinforce their own delusions, though. It's very strange how they operate. Yeah,
and it enables you to train people on the nuclear fuel cycle. I mean, really, when you've got a nuclear reactors, you're right. Any kind of a nuclear reactor, whether it's covert or overt, you know, is 90% of the game to getting a nuclear weapon. You know, because it's all about making the plutonium and the uranium, which is what you do with nuclear reactors in terms of managing the fuel cycle and training all these people overtly. And it can give you excuses to bring in, like the Russians, because the Russians are there. They built Iran's nuclear reactors for them, trained their personnel, okay? And if you are a bad guy like the Russians, then you want the Iranians to have the bomb because you know America is and our allies are going to be the ones under the gun. You know, there's... Even the IAEA undercover evidence that the Russians were clandestinely providing the Iranians with things like bomb design information. They actually had Russian nuclear weapon designers going down there who were purportedly, you know, helping advise them just on the nuclear, you know, on the nuclear reactors, how to run the nuclear reactors and stuff like that. Yeah. So there is the pattern has been, you know, to have a overt and then a covert nuclear program.
Makes sense.
But you can't rule out. You don't need the overt one. You could, if you wanted to try to keep the whole thing secret. You know, you could put it all underground and hide it. Who knows? Maybe some country has done that somewhere.
Yeah, but it's a huge red flag if they have the overt, which is when Clinton gave the nuclear power, the domestic energy, the atoms for peace equivalent to North Korea. I knew damn well it was going to be a weapons program.
Yeah,
I got a quick question.
Exactly.
Yeah, I got a quick question on the intelligence. We had a friend of mine who was on, Jeff Metcalf, who is a Special Forces Lieutenant Colonel, retired Army, and he was talking about the difference between, you know, the field commanders and the Pentagon and the president. And there seems like this huge disconnect between what happens in the field and then it has to go up the chain. If you have an event, you know, in a battle, and it goes up from the field level to, he mentioned, you know, brigade to different levels of stuff, and eventually gets to the president maybe, and then has to come all the way back down again before anybody can do anything. Seems to me that intelligence works the same way, that there's a disconnect between those that actually gather the intelligence, those that write up the intelligence, those that present the intelligence to the leadership, who then has to select the right intelligence from everything they get in order to present that to the president, who isn't even a president in this case, you know, who's just sitting there, you know, who should be on a porch, you know, drinking lemonade and watching the sunset. you've got this disconnect, and then it has to come back down again to intelligence to sort of, you know, find out what to look at next. Do you see that as a similar thing, that the folks that gather the intelligence, those who read the intelligence, those who are in leadership who decide what intelligence is right, are completely disconnected, and then by the time it gets to the presidential level, you know, it's even more disconnected from what's really happening? Do you see failures along the way in that chain?
Yes, I think that's more so. Yeah, I think that that's very much the case in the intelligence community. There's this, the work in the intelligence community is done by people who are like GS-15 and below. The analysts are GS-15, GS-14, GS-13, GS-12, down to GS-9. Okay, those are the people who actually have their hands dirty with the data and do the work, okay? But then on top of them, their bosses are all senior executive service, all right? These GS people don't get to talk to the White House. The senior executive service, you know, if they do, they're always in the company of somebody from the senior executive service. The SES guys, you know, are always massaging the intelligence. They see their careerists, and they see tremendous opportunities. I can't remember the name of the guy who there was a case in the Bush administration.
Snowden?
One of these,
Edward Snowden?
No, there was a senior executive service character who his job was to give Bush the presidential daily briefing, you know, and he was basically the agency's briefer. And because he established that personal relationship with the president, all these SES guys know that the president can just make your life, you know. He can make it, wave that magic wand and turn you into the director of the CIA if he wants to. And that's what happened with this character who had been Bush's briefer. And he wasn't even loyal to Bush. He ended up supporting the Hillary campaign later on over the Benghazi scandal. You know,
that's an intelligence failure.
Right. You know, he was one of those who tried to cover up for Hillary during Benghazi because he saw his star as tied to the Democrat Party and Hillary Clinton. I can't remember that guy's name. But anyway, he's just a classic example of one of these senior executive service guys, you know, who was lucky enough to be able to actually go to the White House. And all of them are looking for that. And none of them wants to bring the bad news to the White House. All of them want to massage the intelligence in such a way that, you know, that it's going to please the president, whoever that is, you know, and unless his last name is Trump, then they didn't give it. They didn't care. If your last name was Trump, you know,
did he even get these briefings?
Totally against you,
matter
what.
That's a
great
question.
But up until that exception in the history, you know, all of these guys would, and it's oftentimes the basis for these the worst intelligence failures, because the intelligence, you know, the senior executive service guys, you know, don't want to be the bearer of bad news. They would rather reinforce, you know, the worldview of the president and his staff and the NSC staff and all the rest, and bring them good news. You know, oh yes, Mr. President, your foreign policy is working. North Koreans will never invade South Korea. Or, you know, we don't have to worry about the Soviet A-bomb. They're at least 10 years away from that. So your plans to internationalize atomic weapons through the United Nations, or, you know, the Baruch plan is not, is practical and it could work out. We've got time before we face a Soviet nuclear threat.
The Taliban won't be in Kabul for another couple of months. That was the news.
Exactly. You know,
the day before they walked in.
Time, right. Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I'm convinced that, you know, that the senior executive service did what it always did. And the other thing is the intelligence community doesn't work the way you see it on television. You know, most people think of it as there was this program 24, you know, where there was a, you know, heroic rogue intelligence officer, you know, who knew the truth, and he would go against all of these other, and there are such people. There are heroic rogue intelligence officers. But when it comes to including people who write analysis, and that first draft, and I've had personal experience with this, okay, can tell the truth, tell it as you see it. Most intelligence officers do try to do their job, and they're not looking to curry favor with the White House. They don't want a Pearl Harbor to happen, okay? And they do their best. But they don't get to publish what they want. You know, they can write that draft, and then it goes to their bosses. It's called speaking with one voice, you know? Mm-hmm. An actually published intelligence product is not the result of that analyst's personal views. It's going to be a collectivist product that represents what's called the corporate view. And so, okay, you can write what you want in that first draft, which is not a published thing. It's just the draft. And then your boss and his boss, all the way up to the SES level, they all get to chop on it and rewrite it. And if that analyst doesn't agree, you know, to go along, it might never get published, you know, at all. And they can decide to publish it even if he doesn't agree with it, you know, because he's just, you know, he's the lowest person on the totem pole as the analyst. You know, all these other guys in the SES level can regard themselves as the real experts, you know, because they have served longer. They have served, even though they're not looking at the data and everything, you know,
right,
because of their age and where they are, you know, surely they're in the SES level where they get paid a lot more and they have a lot more power because they deserve to be, right? That signifies that in the system they are better and smarter than these analysts who are down at the GS-9 to GS-15 level. That's actually how they think. They really do think that. Even though they might not have cracked a book, you know, or read a report in 20 years, they still think that they know better because of their seniority. When in fact what they're doing is, and everybody likes to think that they're actually serving the national interest when these SES guys are really serving their own career interests because they want to tell the White House, they want to please the White House, you know. They know that their future career prospects and all the rest are much better served by going along and getting along with the powers that be than by being like some 24 guy who's going to be a thorn under the saddle of the White House, you know, telling the White House what it doesn't want. You know,
yeah, that goes along with my theory of weeding out the leaders. You know, I used to have an inverse theory of military operations that they would weed out the leaders and promote the followers. And so by the time you get to the general level and especially the general staff and the Joint Chiefs of Staff, you get the greatest followers. And that's how you get like a General Mark Milquetoast, as I call him, you know, who's worrying about white rage when he should be worrying about Afghanistan. You may have said this before, but SES, Senior Executive Staff, just to make sure I got my definition.
Yeah, Senior Executive Service. Senior
service.
Executive
okay.
Service.
All right. Are they like Dr. Fascist who hasn't seen a patient in 40 years? Are these people completely lost touch with actual operating intelligence and intelligence gathering?
Yes, that's right. That's right. You know, they're the, you've got the political appointees on top of them, you know, just a handful of people. And the political appointees, their staff, are these senior executive service guys who are the ones who actually run, you know, the bureaucracy and the apparatus, you know, beneath them. And, you know, and that was, you know, I mean, that was one of the big failures of the Trump administration. You know, I mean, the swamp is still alive and well and intact. You know, to drain the swamp, you need to get rid of these senior executive service guys or move them around or promote them below. Promote from below. Find the rogues. Find the people who are, you know, willing to speak truth to power, you know.
Yeah, but like me, they can't find a real job, so, you know.
Same thing is true in the military. I mean, you know, I really just hope that Trump would all those generals that resigned and were fired by Obama, they were just natural Trump people. They were Trump generals, and he should have brought them all back. But instead, he kept the generals that Obama liked, you know, and that's why we're stuck with these guys. Even when Trump was in power, you know, I'm thinking of the case of General Stephen Quast, for example, who defied Heather Wilson, who was Trump's handpicked Secretary of the Air Force. And the issue was the Space Force. We actually talked about this on your show. Because the Air Force wanted the Space Force to be subordinate to them, because the Space Force doesn't like the idea. The Air Force doesn't want a strategic defense. The space assets to continue to support business as usual, what the Air Force has always done. You know, on the strategic level, mutual assured destruction. At the tactical level, you know, helping them make cruise missile strikes and things of that sort. But the idea of an independent space force that really weaponizes and exploits the high frontier and works the military revolution that's possible from the high frontier, the Air Force doesn't want that. And so they want to be able to control the space force. And General Quast, you know, wanted the space force to be all it could be, you know, and to realize Reagan's vision, because all of us thought that's what Trump wanted too. That's why he brought back the Space Force. So Quast defied the Secretary of the Air Force herself and said, you know, no, I think the Space Force should be independent, you know, of the Air Force, and which is what we all thought Trump wanted too. And Wilson forced General Quast into retirement, and then Trump fired Wilson. So he did that. That was done right. But he didn't bring Quast back. And the Air Force.
He was terrible at the second level.
So the Space Force, is today is dominated by, which is exactly the outcome that Heather Wilson and the U.S. Air Force wanted. The Space Force is dominated by the Air Force. And and I don't think that the Space Force will ever become all it can be if it has to answer, if it's dominated and controlled by the Air Force. That's just another example of how these things happen. How
it's fascinating.
The brave ones
to hold you up, though.
Get chopped down, get their heads chopped off, you know, and you're left with the mediocrities.
Yeah, I got to hold you up because we've got our guest Christian Elliott on the line right now. But I wanted to let him listen for a few minutes to what you were saying. I've discovered it's fascinating to have different guests talk to each other, people who would never meet in life except by these, you know, the accident of being on the show at the same time. So Christian, I'm going to officially welcome you to the show in a bit. But you got a chance to actually ask Dr. Peter Pry a question. He's the foremost expert on nuclear weapons. He knows EMP like nobody else in the world. And we do our national security chat here in the morning. So I don't know if you've had enough time to listen. Or you, maybe you were listening earlier, but before I bring you on, do you have a question for Dr. Pry?
Oh man, I'm not sure I have the question top of mind, but it's been fascinating to listen to you guys in terms of just the politics that goes on behind the scenes.
Oh yeah, listen to some of our podcasts then. All right, in that case, Dr. Pry, I have to let you go. This has been another fascinating look, and what I really appreciate is the things you tell us that we're not looking at, because obviously I gravitate towards some of the biggest headlines, but I want to know the backstory. I want to know what's going on behind the scenes, and I want to know why things aren't working the way they should be working, you know, and what Afghanistan looks to me like this was a planned disaster so they could start the second war, so the permanent war class could basically get us going again. That's why we're sending troops in, you know, as we're withdrawing troops. You know, the war is over. Why are we sending in all the troops? It's a fascinating, you know, sort of a reverse message. Anyway, I have to let you go, though, because maybe we can take that up next week. We see what happens this week.
Okay. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much, too. Here we go. Dr. Peter Pry, who's on Monday mornings at 7:30 Central Time. Christian, I'm going to play one thing here for about a minute or so. I wanted to introduce our Santa Rosa volunteers because I have the special project. Now I'm a little bit behind on my founding moments reports, and those are basically documentations of our entire founding documents. So I'm going to play this one thing real quickly here, the introduction, then we'll get right back to Christian. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio. I am proud to announce a new feature of Action Radio. Santa Rosa Volunteers has commissioned me to bring to you an education in our founding documents, one focused subject at a time. Each week, we will have a new presentation drawing from the Declaration of Independence, the Federalist Papers, the Constitution, and who knows, maybe back to Magna Carta. So enjoy learning about your God-given birthright in these vignettes. Share them with your children, your grandchildren, your parents, your friends, in fact, anyone you want to serve, an accessible yet poignant introduction to a lifelong journey in the study and practice of liberty. The whole purpose of these presentations is to inform a generation or two of Americans about the true meaning of our founding. They should have gotten that in school. Since that is not happening, Santa Rosa Volunteers has decided to help change that. If you want to learn more about Santa Rosa Volunteers and maybe get involved, their website is srv,
srv1776.com. srv1776.com. Their email is srv1776@protonmail.com. It is their goal to share local community information while encouraging everyone to feel welcomed and informed. Santa Rosa Volunteers says, "Arise, patriots! It is time to take our republic back. The sleeping giant awakens. Arise, patriots, and get involved." Until next time, this is Greg Penglis for Action Radio.
Okay, so I'm reading internet stuff one day. I'm looking for reasons, you know, that a lot of people are taking, or you know, to not take the COVID vaccine. I come across this article, 18 reasons, you know, I'm not taking the COVID vaccine, or hopefully I got the title right. Anyway, it was one of the most well-researched, best-documented, incredible articles I'd ever read. And I got to get this guy on the show. So you know me. If I wanted, you know, it's like, let's talk to him. Let's invite him. Let's see what happens. And so Christian and I talked a bunch for at least an hour, I think, you know, off the air about all kinds of different topics, most of which we're going to save for later. But I just found him fascinating. And this guy's, you know, a blogger, and he wants to be a pilot. So I sent him a link to my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. You know, he's the health nut, and just he's like me, curious about everything, wants to do something, wants to make this world a better place. And I thought, you know, why not come to Action Radio and let's talk a little bit about our citizen legislation, the mechanism by which people can do something, and also find out what he's up to. So, Christian, welcome to Action Radio. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Well, this is going to be fun. There's so much to talk about. I've been reading your articles. My problem is, and here's something that maybe you can address in one of your articles, you know, those of us that are sort of maxed out on ADHD, I mean, my attention span is seconds long. This is why I like doing radio. So I can cover so much, you know, in a couple of hours. Mm-hmm. But I have to read articles in bits and pieces just because. So I'm a little bit behind on what I wanted to do. But a couple of things came out, you know, from your reading that I want to focus on that are exactly, you know, some things I've already talked about before. One is that our assumptions are stronger than truth. People will go to their grave with their assumptions, and especially if those assumptions are based on fear. And then I sort of extended that to fear can make you believe and pretty much do anything. But let's, from your experience, just the way we gather information, the way people take stuff in, the you know, when you talk about it, I think in your motivation one, and the difference between a person you know who absolutely, you know, took the Kool-Aid, believed that, you know, it was based on the fear of you know, all the COVID stuff, wanted the vaccine, couldn't understand why you think the way you do. How can you say that? I mean, Dr. Fascist is so clear. Well, she doesn't call him that, but I do. You know, the genocidal psychopathic vaccine drug pusher, right? So, and then those of us who go, this guy's a drug pusher. He's as corrupt as hell. This is all about marketing. Why can't you see that? Why can't you see the vaccine isn't needed because it's 99.995% survivable? You know, for most people, don't even know they're going to have it. So we live in a country where assumptions are leading people to wrong conclusions. And you know, and then I wrote another thing down here. It's like, if you live in fear, you'll never find the truth. But if you live in truth, you don't have anything to fear. And so we got all these different things going on. So I'm going to kind of let you expand on that and what your, you know, orientation is with this. But we got a split country and we got to find a way to sort of bridge the gap between those that live in fear and those that live in truth. Yeah. Yeah. So let me turn it over to you.
Yeah, well, I mean, so many different ways I could go with that, but the reality that we're so split, it comes back to, I've been mulling this over for months now, as probably most of us have been, like, how is it that we are so split on something that should be, you know, science should be fairly objective and guide us toward more logical answers, and what we've got more or less is people just digging their heels in and entrenched, and that puzzle just fascinates me. How in the world are we so split over this? When to me, it's quite obvious that this is, like, to your point, this is very survivable. This is not a super deadly virus going around. It is it seems a man-made attempt to, I don't know, cook up something nefarious, what you could say. And
I call it a marketing campaign.
It's timeline. It's shocking.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, how great they are. No, I did write about through the timeline. You said this has been in the works. If you go back and look at all the patents for about two decades, they have been planning this. So just understanding where this came from isn't enough for a lot of people. They still want to know it can't be. It's at some point it becomes willful. I just can't believe that. And the thing I tried to point out in one of my most recent articles is just the word belief It is a faith statement. And yeah. when you say, no, it's just, no, there's no way it could be that. I just can't believe that would be possible. Okay, well, examine what you just said. You just said, I can't believe it. Well, that is possibly in spite of evidence. And mm-hmm. if you challenge the belief that someone has and says, actually, well, show me where you that belief came from and reason with me, usually I found people just kind of shut down. There eventually comes a point where they're, I can't defend that position anymore, so I'd just rather not talk to you. It's too painful. And to me, the thing that finally made the most sense, and it's kind of why people aren't, their minds don't change when they're presented with facts, is it's because there's a subcurrent or an unconscious mm-hmm. need to belong. It's such a hardwired Ooh. Human characteristic. And if we feel like mm-hmm. something challenges our identity or our connection to the group of people that we've come to feel at home with, then we will do all sorts of irrational things, even just things that don't make any sense on the superficial level, because it's too painful to be disassociated from our tribe. And that's ingrained from childhood all the way up through, we never lose it. We just get smarter about pretending that we're more objective. And at the end of the day,
that's a great line in itself. Yeah. We don't pretend we're more objective. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, but we're not. We're emotional creatures who happen to think. And what's more important to us is that we feel safe and secure and that we belong. If I start saying things that you feel like are going to distance you from your friends or from your family, or that you will be disowned, just think about that mm-hmm. word, yeah. owned, right? Like, what owns you? But if
Ooh,
you feel like you're
going
to be
yeah.
disowned or disassociated from the people that are important to you, mm-hmm. you will look for any, you will cling to irrationally any sort of evidence that makes you feel better. Okay, fine. These people, I don't have to believe that, because if I did, my mom and my dad and my parents or my siblings or my friends or my coworkers, they'll think I'm crazy. And I can't stand the pain of being disassociated from the people that I either love, respect, or just am around and give me a sense of belonging. And whether it's gangs or whether it's churches or whatever it is, we will do whatever it takes to stay connected to the people that we feel like make us belong. And
even if it
that
kills
is
you.
A much right. That's a much stronger undercurrent than facts, than logic. And if we don't, those of us who get what's going on, if we can't create a scenario where the people who are slowly waking up feel welcome, and they mm-hmm. don't feel like they're going to be judged, they feel like they're going to be loved and welcomed into a psychologically safe environment where, I'm on the winning team and these people aren't crazy and so on and so forth. If we can't do that, well, we're not going to win them over. We have to invite them into something that feels better, like they're stepping into something and they're coming home. And that's, I think, where we're losing the battle as much as anything. So anyway, I don't know if that answered your question, but those are some of the
no,
things.
No, no,
that
there
really
are no, you don't, there aren't. There's no absolute answers on this show. I ask impossible questions. And so I think part of the fun of Action Radio, especially for me doing this, is that I don't have all the answers. This isn't kind of, it's not like where the production manager or the, you know, says, well, you have to do this. You have to solve everything in 2 minutes. You have to give people, you know, they're 12-year-olds, mm-hmm. you know, don't talk to them intelligently. They can't handle it. You know, there's such crap out there. This is one of the bad assumptions. But what you've done, as I'm listening to you talk about this here, so my, you know, Greg's rule number one, assumptions are stronger than truth. Mm-hmm. The part I haven't answered yet that I think you just did answer is where the assumptions come from. The assumptions come from a need to belong, you know, and the whole idea of tribe. And this is something that fascinates me, because I am probably one of the most disassociated people on the planet based on my mm-hmm. personal experience. You know, I was born in Canada. You know, I had, you know, one parent was Australian of Greek background. The other was Canadian of English background. Totally different cultural families. You know, I was moved to mm-hmm. Australia. Totally different cultural experience from a Canadian government school to an Australian private school with, you know, like Angus Young, you know, of AC/DC by the school uniform. I got caned for the first time. I was actually hit with a bamboo cane. All right. You know, and we all wore uniforms to school, and I wore a tie, and you stood up when the professor, the teacher entered the room, and, you know, it was all boys, and it was, you know, teachers were all men. And then I went to an American junior high, you know, totally different experience. And I'm back in barbarian land with crazy people. you know, who don't wear uniforms and don't stand up when the teacher enters the room. And it was just totally reckless. And I thought, what am I doing here? So the times that I've been disassociated, then of course my parents got divorced and now I'm on my own. And then here I am on my own in a strange country, no extended family, no tribe, no immigrant group to help me. There was no Canadian, Australian immigrant group. Plus I'm a white guy. So that disassociates me right there as part of the white oppressive class. And I'm like, who the hell have I oppressed? I've been here, you know, when I got to college, you're a white oppressor. I said, what are you talking about? I've been here 5 years. You know, I just got off the boat in New York. I'm an immigrant. I haven't had time to oppress everybody. I don't even know how. Okay. So all this stuff is going on. So for me, I look at this differently. This is why I think I have no fear for Action Radio. I mean, none. You know, I'm doing this. It is crazy. People told me I'm crazy. It's reckless. You can't do that. You can't challenge this. One guy said to me, I can't believe it. He says, well, maybe you should just file local legislation for 5 years until you get the hang of it. I said, I already have 4 bills in Congress. Oh, or, you know, at that point, I give it to our congressman here, Matt Gaetz, you know, in the first district. And so they weren't actually being debated in Congress, but I don't want to mislead people. But yeah, so it's like everybody wants to hold you back. Everybody does that. So for me, my experience, which is so different than I mean, everybody has a unique experience, but I don't have a tribe. I've been to, well, actually I do now because the Santa Rosa Creek tribe has actually admitted me as a member of the tribe. So I really do have a tribe. It's kind of funny. But I don't feel any connection that I have to please anybody because of my now I wouldn't wish this experience on anybody. It was an incredibly traumatic way to grow up. But the end result is that I don't have a tribe. So I can look at this and go, why do you feel this need to belong? What is so powerful about family? Because I've basically dumped mine. You know, I've completely redone my friends a few times and started my life completely over like I did, you know, 5 years ago here in Florida. So I don't have any fear of doing that. I don't have a fear of risk. I don't have a fear of challenge. I don't need to associate to I don't have to have my beliefs validated. They get validated because I believe my, you know, when I say things that are true, people will go, oh, that's true. I recognize that. But they recognize it for truth, not because they have to agree with me or I have to have their agreement with me, you know, to believe that something's true. I've several times on Facebook, I've been the only voice, you know, with like 30 or 40 people arguing against me. And I don't care. I don't feel any need to conform to what they say. 2 + 2 = 4. I'm sorry. This is an Orwell land. I can stand up against the group and say 2 + 2 = 4, even when the entire world is saying, no, you're wrong. 2 + 2 = 5, because I know they're wrong. But that's a strange position. But my experience has allowed me to be the lone voice in a crowd and not succumb to the pressure to have to belong. Now, put that into your mix and what do you get?
Well, that's definitely an interesting backstory because it does explain some of your ability to be a little more objective or to not feel like you're going to, you know, lose a bunch of friends for just saying what makes sense to you. And so many of us don't have that position. We're stuck. My brother, my dad, my work, my boss, whoever. What will they think of me? And to think that we are above the idea of, oh, I don't care what other people think. Yes, you do. Every single human on the planet cares what other people think. We wouldn't be doing anything if we didn't think it would matter to someone. And so for you to be able to just come and say, you know, I care what truth is, and I'll find the people who resonate with this, and I'll keep talking about it and make a difference where I can. That's great. But yeah, so many people don't have that. And they get stuck in the assumptions loop and the, I don't want it to, can't be. I don't want it to be that way. There's no way that could be right. And they're just like salivating, waiting for Fauci to say something so they can, now I know what to think because they told me that I found a Snopes article that shot that down. And you're like, my gosh, wake up, people. There's so much manipulation to get you to stay in. Just if the censorship doesn't wake you up, I don't know what will. I mean, that is so heavy-handed and one-sided. But again, it comes back to tribal. It comes back to assumptions, and we're not very good about questioning our assumptions. My book list from last year, I went back. I kind of tried to write an article at the end of each year about my favorite books or documentaries or things I've learned in a given year. And I looked over the books that I picked up from last year, and the theme was just questioning your assumptions and how predictably irrational we humans are. And so many of the different books I read picked up on that theme, and it really starts to arrest you. Like, oh shoot, I'm doing that. Okay, where else am I making this error in judgment? And when you start to find it and you realize there's freedom in questioning your assumptions, it can be liberating. It can be disorienting. But the people that I end up coaching, they come to me because they're finally ready to question their assumptions. They're what I have been doing has not worked. I thought it worked. I tried so many things. I assumed this would work and it didn't. And they're finally ready to question. Breakthroughs don't come by digging your heels in and assuming you're right and believing against any evidence or any other option. that I have the right answer and I'm going to do the thing. And when you finally go, you know what, maybe I don't know. Maybe I've been looking at this wrong. Maybe the narratives I have been telling myself are sabotaging me. Maybe they're actually in the way. Maybe this rule I have lived by, or this belief from childhood, or this wound that I carry because of an interaction with my mom or my dad or my friend or a coworker or a bully at school or whoever, maybe what I came to believe about myself in that moment is not serving me. And what would it mean if I believed differently? And how can I reframe that narrative I believed? And can I work through the emotional upheaval that comes with doing it and find that I'm going to be able to hit terra firma? And that's a lot of the work I end up doing for clients, is getting them back on, creating a psychologically safe environment, getting them back on terra firma and say, look, there's nothing here you can do to be unloved, nothing. And let's work through the implications of what you just said. And as you do that, whether it's COVID or whatever, it starts to feel like, wait a minute, okay, this is different. It feels different. The ideas need time to expand in your head. But when you start to step back and feel, oh, okay, that actually feels liberating. There's a belief that if that changed, everything would change for me. Same thing happens when you start to wake up to COVID, like, oh my gosh, this doesn't have to be, like, this is an ugly fight. There is evil did not leave the planet. It's still here. Okay, well, what would it mean to face that then? What's my role in it? And so on. And so, you're dead on with it. Check your assumptions. They are stronger than truth, because we will believe something, not check the assumption, and then just act as if it's true. And when you go back and you see a wrong turn in your thinking or in the rule you've lived by, the wound somebody gave you as a kid, and you start to think and see things differently, it's transformative.
Yeah. I'm going to bring Gina in the conversation, because Gina used to do our life coach report, and I know she's dying to ask you a question. But we're wide open here too. So Gina, like I say, feel free to jump anytime. Gina's our new producer here, who saved my butt last week when my internet wasn't working. She just leapt right in and just did the show. And I had to call into my own talk show. It was pretty amazing. But there was a couple of things I was thinking as you're going through this, the idea of fear too, that really plays into this. And do you ask people, you know, what are you really afraid of? Let's get down to this. What is this fear if you disagree? What is this fear if you sort of go against the grain? What if you're the only person in the room with your opinion? Wasn't there a famous experiment that, you know, that basically the 2+2=5 experiment, where they put a kid in a classroom and they just thought it was a regular classroom, but all the other kids were in on this, or even young adults were in on this, psychological study, where they'd say, well, something a little more complicated than that, but basically that math problem that where they obviously had the wrong answer, and the teacher said, no, the answer is this, you got it wrong, you know, to the subject of the study. And the other kid's, yeah, it's wrong. And the kid's like, no, it's really right, you know, I worked this through, you know, 2+2 really is 4. And they're like, no, it's not, it's 5, you know. And of course, well, I worked it through here too, look, it's 5. And everybody, kids would all show their paper, and it's a famous experiment, but they didn't, the person who was actually right didn't know that. But almost all of them, I think with rare exception, very, very small percentage of the people would actually say, you people are idiots, I don't know what your problem is, but you have no idea what's going on. That was the abnormal. Most people eventually agreed that 2+2 really was 5 under peer pressure, even though in their gut they knew it was wrong. But they went along because it's more important to go along than it was to be right. And I feel just the opposite. If I'm in a bunch of morons, I'm going to call them a bunch of morons. And it's not going to change my opinion. Interesting. What do you think?
Yeah. Well, I think you're right. There's several studies that prove that. And a quick story from me. My daughter's playing middle school volleyball, and we're in a really small town with fairly freedom loving crowd, and probably 100-200 people in the audience just watching the girls play volleyball. And you'd see somebody walk into the auditorium or the stadium with a mask, and they'd look around and nobody's wearing one, and so they take theirs off. Like, we do whatever the crowd does. It's so telling how much, if I don't want to be the only one here who's doing that. It works the opposite way. If you're the only one not wearing it, it feels really unsettling, like all the eyes are on you and you're being judged.
Have permission to take it off because everybody else had theirs up and they thought they had to do it to conform. And then they found they didn't have to, and maybe they were relieved to take it off.
Yeah. No, we're tribal. We do what the tribe does. We want to feel like wherever we go that we don't stand out and we're creating friction. We want to feel like we belong and that we're loved and that we're contributing, that we cannot get away from that undercurrent that drives us. And so if everybody in the store is wearing it, I guess I'll do it because I don't want to rock the boat. And
I've never felt that way.
At some
point. I realized I was so different. This is why I need you guys to sort of tell me, explain to me this phenomena, because I can't relate, not even a little bit.
Right.
Wow.
No,
yeah. Gene, we'll bring Gene in. Go ahead. Finish up, Chris, and I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
All right. Gene, do you want to get in on this?
Yeah, I would just like to ask one question, and this could be what's going on, not even with the vaccine, but everything in this country. What's one thing of advice you could give people to top them off the ledge or give them more, how to say, motivation to speak their truth or do what they believe in, especially when it comes to the vaccine or not get the vaccine, because there's so many people now that are told they're going to lose their job if they don't get the vaccine by a certain date. Yet it's just crazy because everybody has their own beliefs. But what can you do to tell them, to keep them empowered or make them more empowered, but also make the right decision for themselves and not what they think other people want them to do or say?
Yeah, there's several generalities I can speak to, and you know, that, you know, scripture, judge not lest you be judged. I'd like to think that in whatever scenario you could put me in, I would have the biggest backbone and I would stand up for, and I would be the one in a thousand if I needed to be standing up and be like, you guys are all crazy and I'm not doing this and I'm standing on principle. And I would hope to think I'm that person all the time. Put me in the right situation. Maybe I'm not. So I don't want to weigh too heavy and make people feel like if they just have to do this thing that they're evil, they caved and their integrity is compromised. But the flip side of that is, my gosh, we are in an era of unprecedented tyranny. There's probably not a better word for it. We are being manipulated. Our government is so bold as to break our own laws of coercion, of requiring something that is under emergency use. That is not a gray area in the law. It's black and white. It is illegal to force someone to take something they don't want. The fact that they are so emboldened to break the law, they just say, you know, screw it. Stop us if you can. And when you face tyranny, our founding father said, you are obligated to stand up. You don't, it's not like, man, if you feel like it. No, your duty is to stand up and say, that is wrong. And if it comes to losing your job or sacrificing a relationship, sometimes, unfortunately, that is the cost of doing it. But instead of feeling like the sky is falling and where are we going to go from? Oh my gosh, how are we going to handle this? Think of yourself as liberated. You have been freed from the shackles of someone who wants to own you and tell you what to do and put you in your place. And you can stand up to that and you will feel good about it. And what I found writing, you know, blogging, 4.something million people have read one of my blogs. And I thought, my gosh, I was braced for so much pushback and hatred and vitriol coming at me. And what I found was the opposite.
That's interesting.
It's 99. Yeah,
no, that's fascinating that you expected to be vilified, you know, for taking a position that you knew was correct.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. Okay.
Yeah, and people came out of the woodwork. It's for every one troll I get 100 people who say, thank you. I've been to doctors and nurses and scientists and public health officials. They email me and they say, thank you for doing what I didn't feel like I could do. It's so good. It helps me to know there are people like
– why didn't they feel like they could do it? That's the key to this.
Because
why were they disempowered?
Something on the line. They're disempowered because the fear, back to your point, that they will lose something precious to them, their tribe, their job. That's not a minor fear or decision. And, you know, Ben Franklin's quoted that you can give up a little security to gain a little free, or give up a little freedom to gain a little security. And when you do that, you deserve neither and lose both. To think that you will give up that freedom of choosing body autonomy and deciding what things you inject yourself with and that you'll get your freedom back, that's the opposite. You just lost more of it. You've just, every time you give it up, you don't get it back. And knowing that you're not going to get it back, it's a ruse. It's wait till the next booster and then the full schedule of adult vaccines. And if you see what they're tying to the vaccine passport, it's not just whether or not you had two shots. It is your past potential criminal behavior. It is your bank records. It is everything about your personal information, where you go, what you buy. It's all tied into, it's a social credit system turning us into China. And when you realize that's the end game, that's where we're taking this, you can say, do I want to participate in that? Or do I want to look back 5 or 10 years from now and say, I stood up to that and I said no. The way we win this is by all of us saying, no, I do not comply. And hopefully we skip this without violence. I think there's a really good chance we do that. But you just start disentangling yourself from the systems that are trying to build a prison for you and say, no way, I am not going to participate in that anymore. And the more you do that, the more confidence you get, the more you find people who think like you. You are far from alone. There are people everywhere who want to stand up for truth. They just need a leader. We are craving confidence and clarity and leadership right now, and hope. If you give somebody hope or you give somebody confidence that we can win this, it's a whole different ball game, and they'll find a fire in their belly. And then one other thing I'll say is there is life on the other side of getting fired. There is life on the other side of losing a friend or being estranged from your family. There is a whole new group of people. I went through bankruptcy. I know how rough it is to feel like the sky is falling and to have to rebuild life from zero. That's hard, but I can tell you there is life on the other side of it, and it can be liberating if you will step in and be comfortable standing in the fire a little bit and say, you know what, I'm going to stand up for truth. I'm not going to be bullied. I defy you, Fauci, to break my will, to discourage me. I will not be broken by you. There's a whole different feeling of being alive that sweeps over you when you start thinking that way.
Oh, you're more than preaching to the converted. I think you just justified Action Radio, because that's exactly what we do here. And you know, yeah. Here's a nice segue. Let me just sneak in this. I want to play something for you that, speaking of being bold and defiant, I do my own little PSAs, which you're not going to hear anywhere else. Let me play you my, where is it? My Biden. Oh, it looks like my things got rearranged here somehow. Listen to this for a minute. Tell me what you think. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio. You've all heard those ads for people who have suffered medical or health tragedies, which say you may be entitled to compensation. But if you have suffered injuries or crippling diseases or medical procedures that went horribly wrong, it's not the compensation you need, it's the knowledge you should have had before the condition you suffer from now. So that you are never in that position in the future, I strongly recommend that you do not get any COVID vaccines. Get informed. Do your own research. For 99.97% of Americans, your natural immunity will give you, at worst, only moderate symptoms of COVID. If you've already had COVID, it's virtually impossible to get it again. There are effective cures for COVID, which will get you completely over the virus. There is no cure for the COVID-19 vaccines. Once you start down the road of DNA modification, there is no going back. So that's my idea of a PSA.
Yeah, well, you're right, and speaking the truth, and hopefully giving some people resting their thought. Be like, wait a minute. Once you take that shot, you don't get to undo that. And to your point,
you don't.
We don't have any treatments for that. There's all the body-wide systemic inflammation that can start in your body. It's not just the blood clot that's big that you can see on some sort of scan. You'd have to get something like a D-dimer test, where you can see the coagulation at the capillary level, the clotting that starts to happen because these spike proteins start to travel throughout your whole body, and they're sticky, and blood platelets start sticking to them and creating micro clots. And that is what they're finding on the autopsies they're doing for these people. And we don't have a way to undo that yet. There's some people working as diligently as they can to try to deal with the inevitable downstream problems that are coming a year or two down the road from all these vaccines. But my gosh, do not play roulette with your life and take that highly experimental, questionable, more deaths than any other vaccine, all of them put together shot that they're trying to push on you.
Yeah. Yeah, and we've covered this. And in fact, I did a whole show on buying back your birthright, you know, and why that's insane and why you can't do that. And if you accept that deal, that this is the pathway back to normal. I said, no, normal is the pathway back to normal. Normal is what we had. Normal is what we need to go back to immediately. And so there's a lot of people that are, like you say, you know, all the Trump supporters know the election was stolen, but they're not in a position to do something about it. So part of the problem is people feel disempowered. You know, it's like, yeah, I know Biden stole the election. I know the deep state's in control. I know we don't have any legitimate government. What can I do? And so the whole reason I created Action Radio, in answering your questions, you know, in the I call it the Oz article, you know, pay no attention to the man behind the curtain, right? And I said, it's time to, the last section is great. It's time to rise up. And you've got peaceful noncompliance, grassroots activism, leverage the court system. I want to go over each one of those. But my solution is bills, is that we actually write the laws by which we consent to be governed by. You know, and this is something that no one's ever, apparently no one's ever thought of it. No one's ever practiced this. It's certainly not been connected to a radio show. So we're pioneers here. We're breaking just all kinds of new ground every day. And so this is why I find it so fascinating, and hope that you'll find it as fascinating as we do, and maybe, you know, write about this too, which would be just, you know, amazing to get the word out there so people can go, oh, I can write a bill. I can have something that might end up on the president's desk. Me, you know, me, the plumber in Arkansas, me, the hairstylist in Maine, me, the, you know, whoever, the college student, you know, in Arizona, me, I can do something that good where I can end up, you know, and I'll be the one to do that. And so this, I think, is the most empowering thing out there right now, because not only do we have, you know, the ability of anybody to write legislation that can then be shared on every media, every talk show, with Congress, with state legislatures, with local governments, you know, it's this, and everybody else can comment on it, and they can go, wow. And I don't expect a lot of bill writers, but somebody's going to. But I do expect people to share and look into this and go, wow, I like that bill better. And so when Congress says, well, we're doing the best we can, this is an issue that requires months of study and, you know, millions of dollars. And it's like, no, it doesn't. Here's the answer right here. We give people something that they can take into their hands, send directly to their member of Congress and say, look, I got a bill right here that says that, you know, full product liability goes back on vaccine manufacturers. And all this bill does is take the word, you know, vaccine manufacturers shall not be liable, and says vaccine manufacturers shall be liable. That's basically all the bill does. It just takes out the word not. And by taking out the word not, I've changed everything. So what I find so fascinating about this process, because I didn't know how it was going to turn out, but what I find so fascinating is actually how simple it is. The hard part is the belief system. The hard part is getting people to accept that it can be done. That's the hard part. The actual writing of the legislation and realizing how easy it is to write better legislation that is earth-shattering. Mm-hmm. There are very few things you need to change. But you go to exactly the right spot in the legislation, you find exactly what you need to change, and that changes everything. But then it's the belief system of getting people to do it. And you got extremes. You've got ballots, which we know don't work because elections are stolen. And we got bullets, because we don't want to get into that, because now you're civil war. Now millions of people are going to get killed. We don't want that. So, but what's the option between? And then I came up with bills. So we write the bills. We send them to our duly constituted, hopefully, legislatures. And we say, this is what we consent to be governed with. What do you think? And then we can judge them at election time, you know, but we can also lobby. We can do all the things that the special interests do. So instead of laws going from special interest to government to us, they go from us to government back to special interests. You know, we reverse the normal process, and in that bring about a level of freedom that nobody in the world has ever thought of. And this is how I see our way back from the abyss of the tyranny that we're in now. And after that, I'll take Josie's call, because she's on the line too. What do you think, Christian?
No, I think it's a brilliant model. I mean, to me, it's what the country was meant to be in the first place. And I think the way that gains traction is we start on hyper local levels, our city councils, and we get to counties, and then we get to state level. And it's not as much work, it's not as overwhelming. There are roadmaps to do this sort of thing. We just need the people willing to put the plan to action and show up and record the votes, right? So
It's plans here. The bills are here. The plans here. We got more bills, more things to do. But basically, the technology, the methodology of citizen legislature, we've pretty much got it worked out. We've worked out the bugs. We know how to do this. Anyway, I want to talk about our bill to create an illegal alien free zone here in Santa Rosa County. But first, I want to take Josie, who I'm sure has a call for you. Josie, you're on with Christian Elliott, my very special guest this hour. Josie?
Hey, good morning. Nice talking to you here. I own a medical uniform store in Pensacola, and I deal with nurses and doctors every single day, and other staff, of course, and I hear it all. So I'm very, very disappointed that a lot of the doctors and nurses don't come forward because they're afraid to lose their jobs. But the latest is that a lot of vaccinated people are showing up to their facilities full of blood clots in their lungs. One lady now with blood clots in her leg, and they're giving them blood thinners immediately. How can I encourage these people to come forward? I don't know what else to do. I send them videos, and I'm helping some of them, but it's just very frustrating for me, and it's disgraceful what the medical field people are doing right now to innocent people, and I'm very angry about this.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I think the biggest thing that we hope and possibly need to communicate to people in the medical establishment is that there's life after that. you're not necessarily going to be able to change the monster. So get outside the monster. Like, it will take people that have the courage of a Simone Gold from America's Frontline Doctors and all the doctors that have been liberated from their positions entangled in the system and have become part of rebuilding ethical medicine and becoming private practice doctors. And so what I would encourage people to do who are in the medical system is to look for people who are in private practice, who are outside the systems, to find the doctors and the networks and America's Frontline Doctors, Frontline Critical Care Alliance. There are several that are already out there and that need help. There's so many people calling in and trying to get the actual medicines and supplements that help beat back COVID, and they need more people. So find a way outside the system that you can exist and know that, okay, if you have to step out of that because you have to make an ethical choice, it's between your integrity and your job. You won't regret the integrity. Mm-hmm. You may have a season of needing to find a different kind of work, but you may be able to take your background and do completely different work than what you have as mm-hmm. part of my story. My educational background is semi-different from where I ended up, and I love what I'm doing, but it was just a series of different turns.
Just out of curiosity.
I went to Calvin College and got a communications degree, and I went to Solar Seminary and got a Master's of Divinity degree. So I'm trained in communication and speaking and ministry, essentially, to help people shepherd them toward whole life and whole, and it became whole health when my health started failing. And so it's a mix of that I do today. I didn't see myself here, but I took the skills that I had and I did the best I could with them, and have managed to build a pinch me kind of life. Like, wow, I love what I do. I love the family that I have. I love where I live. And there's so many bumps and bruises along the way to nobody gets to skip hard knocks in life. But if you're in that system and you feel stuck and you don't know what to do, know that you will feel good not compromising your integrity, and that there is something else for you to do, and we need you outside that. So start network with the people you know who are awake, or find other institutes and private practices to plug into, but know that we crave your skills and your leadership, and that system is going to break, and it's going to be the people who are just lemmings that are left in it, and none of us want to go to a system like that.
There's one hospital in our city that is mandating the vaccine by, I believe, it's September 1st, and some of the colleges too, September 1st. Mm-hmm. I met a nurse. She's here from Texas, and we have become friends, and she's panicking now because she's at West Florida Hospital, which West Florida is not requiring the vaccine, but she's working for this APHIS. You have till September 1st to get vaccinated. And she don't know what to do. She's a travel nurse, so she's here for 6 weeks. And she's panicking because she's about to lose her job as the 1st of September if she doesn't get the vaccine. And then I had another nurse. She just got hired in one of the local hospitals. And she said, I lied that I got the vaccine. She said, I hope I don't get caught in the lie. I said, look, I'm sure God will forgive you that you're trying to save his creation with humanity. I hear everything every day, so I'm overwhelmed at the end of the day every day with all the stories from so many nurses and doctors too.
Yeah. So, I guess one thing I could say that can give you actionable, like, legal ground to stand on is go to americasfrontlinedoctors.org and click on legal, and you will find a boatload of resources that are letters that you would have. Like, put the burden of proof back on your employer. Prove to me this thing safe. Prove to me that a mask actually works. Prove to me that you're going to – you understand the risks that you're forcing on me that I might actually take on. And so there are letters you can send to your employer, to your schools, that things that you can do to stand up. And it is written by very intelligent, you know, dream team type lawyers who can back your institute into a corner and say, no, we don't accept this, and here's why. And so if nobody stands up, nothing changes. So somebody has to do it. And if it falls on you to do it, then you do it.
Yeah
I'm working with
Thank
a group
you.
That's this battling that. Yeah. I'm sorry, Jesse, just make sure you got that in. Yeah. And so we're doing the same kind of thing. But, you know, I've had this post on my Facebook page for a long time, and I've got a different post right now because we're doing a local bill. But for anyone that wants to go to 21 U.S. Code Section 360BBB-3- Authorization for Medical Products for Use in Emergencies, subsection A12AB34, blah, 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 down to, I think it's E, where I had this written down. E, no, hang on. Let me scroll down here. I know it's here somewhere. Oh, boy, I should have had this prepped ahead of time. Anyway, it goes to – it says basically that the law is very, very clear. You can't be forced to take a vaccine. Mm-hmm. You can't be forced to take any emergency procedure. Oh, I'll find it in a second. Anyway, this is frustrating. I didn't realize the bill was this long. Where's the short – I can find the short version. Anyway, I'll find it in a bit. Point being that the law is clearly says you cannot be forced to do this.
Right.
And yet,
it's black and white.
People
it's
are being forced
gray.
To do this. Yeah.
Right. That's the brashness. If that doesn't wake you up that our own government from the pulpit, mm-hmm. from the president himself saying you have to go get vaccinated and coercing you and telling you, like he's okay with businesses mandating it. If that black and white breaking of our own law does not wake you up to the evil that is in front of us, my gosh.
Well, let me ask you this, then. What do you think's behind that? What is this incredible need that the tyrants have, you know, for conformity? I mean, I've been watching a bunch of videos from Academy of Ideas. It's fascinating. Mass psychosis. You know, it's like the you have to believe in climate change, otherwise you're a denier. Well, it's not a religion. It's a science. I mean, the climate's going to go up and down regardless of what I believe. So it doesn't matter what I believe. You know, I'm just going to take a look and look at this objectively. But you look at the government doctors like Dr. Fascist, the most evil man on the planet. He's right up there with Mengele and the gas chambers and everything else. He's probably responsible more than anyone else for the 600,000 people we've lost, either dying from or with COVID. And even then, the numbers aren't clear. But I've been calling him a psychopathic, genocidal vaccine drug pusher for months now. I've been calling him Dr. Fascist for over a year. You know, and we need to label these people for what they are. But why do they feel – I know this is a marketing campaign. I know the vaccine came out years ago. We've documented all this. I know that that Dr. Fascist has over 1,000 patents. He makes tons of money from royalties, licenses, and things like that. And yet he and Big Pharma feel the need – or at least the government – feel the need to force everybody like a religion, like a cult, to take this vaccine to get their life back, and people are going along with this. Now, we've covered the half that people are going along with it. We know the fear and the tribal reasons that the people need to belong. But why is it – what is it about tyranny that makes such absolute conformity a requirement? And if you don't, you're ostracized. You're you know, metaphorically burned at the stake. You're pilloried. You're evil for not doing what everybody does, even though we know – those of us on the other side know that this vaccine is A, not needed, and B, dangerous. Where does that come from? The tyranny, the conformance to tyranny.
Well, I mean, I think you can step back and make it fairly simple. Evil has not left the planet. There are people who have unfettered greed and they have a desire for power that is insatiable. And when those people spend enough time planning and they have enough money, they get to do their best to impose their will on the planet. They have a sickness from probably some childhood wound that they're trying to overcome, or some narcissistic part of their brain that doesn't work better, that they think, I am going to take all of my wealth and all my focus of effort and impose my will on the planet. And you don't have to look far back in history to find people who want to be dictators, who get drunk on power, and they just love the sound of their own voice and the sound of their own ideas, and they will do whatever it takes to bring that to pass. If you don't think that's possible again today, then you don't know history and you don't know human nature. That's just what's going on. It's played out on the biggest, grandest stage with the tools of censorship, with the tools of top-down control. He who has the money makes the rules. That's what's happening. We live in an oligarchy that's a fake democracy that we have. The people who have the money are the ones making all the rules and puppeteering this entire mess, because if you've been a billionaire for decades, you get bored after a while. What else am I going to do? Like, let's see if I can take over the world. And that's essentially what they're doing. They're trying to force their will on people, their view that I should be the one that decides. I am the smartest. My ideas are the best. So I am going to force them on humanity. The hubris and lack of humility, lack of ability to see their own blind spots or deficits in their thinking, and to be so willfully attacking humanity with their agenda is mind-blowing, but we also can't be surprised by it. It's just bigger than ever and as well-planned as ever. And so that's what we're up to. That's what we're up against. And once you see it, it's like, oh, you're just a wizard behind a curtain. You're just one person. You're just a group of people drunk on your own power.
It's a bluff.
Unaware of your own blind spot. It is.
Yeah.
And they're going to lose. It will take us 2 or 3, 4 years to unravel this, but they're not going to – they can't throw all of us in jail. They can't force us. We're just going to – they've so accelerated the exodus from their tools of tyranny where we're just getting off their platforms. We're switching banks. We're doing everything we can to buy from local, and we're just – leaving. We're just done. We're not going to put up with it anymore.
School boards are changing.
Exactly.
Everything's
changing. It's just going to take time. And their biggest weapon is fear. As long as they get us afraid, we're not rational anymore, and they get us to do whatever we want or they want.
Yeah.
So as soon as you understand what's going on, you that's just a man behind the curtain. Okay. Yeah. I'm just going to go do something else. Irrelevant. I'm moving on. You don't own me. And anyway, that's a longer answer to your question, but yeah.
No, that's okay. No, I appreciate it. Listen, I have the time. I love longer answers. In fact, I want you back. Obviously, we've got a lot more to talk about. We've got about less than 5 minutes now. Let's go to It's Time to Rise Up. You've got peaceful noncompliance, grassroots activism, and leveraging the court system. In the remaining 4 minutes, would you please tell me how we rise up?
Yeah, well, I mean, one is we just say no. It's shockingly simple. I do not consent. I will not take that. Somebody comes to your door or asks you about a vaccine, you can play it any number of ways. You can say, wow, how was your colonoscopy? I want to know the last time you did that. Or you go to a restaurant and they ask you to get a vaccine. You just say, can you tell me who the waiter is and when did they have their vaccine? And have they been vaccinated against? You just turn it back on them and make it sound silly because it is stupid. Just say no. Just peacefully, I don't comply. I won't do that. No, I will not spend my money here. If half of us got off Facebook tomorrow, Facebook would feel that. Like it would start to go, we just have to say, no, I'm not going to participate in your systems anymore. But grassroots activism, to me, it marries so well with what you're doing. It is the local. It's the people you know. It's going to your city council. It's having a voice. It's bringing legislation to them. It's learning the tools of effective activism and saying, we want to be governed differently. We did not consent to this. So please put these laws in place. And, you know, there's several different organizations doing it. Make Americans Free Again is another great one. They have meetings every Thursday. You just get on Zoom and you just talk and you figure out strategy of what you're going to do and who you're going to reach out to. And the more that we take back the local level, the more that eventually hits a tipping point and sweeps across the nation and takes over the state level. I've got a link in my article to freedom-loving, freedom-fighting groups in every single state and in many different countries. And once you realize they're out there, there's your tribe. Plug into these people and go do something. It's empowering to feel like you're doing something and you have a chance to influence the outcome. Fear just leaves because you're taking action again. And then the court system, if there's any part of democracy or our Constitution that still has a heartbeat and a pulse, it's the courts. There's been some fairly significant wins. You're not going to hear about them in the news because they don't fit the agenda. But 5G just got a big blow to it. There's different states that have shot down mandates. There's only 5 states left where there isn't at least a bill that's being debated to limit medical tyranny, to provide medical freedom. And so once you know that that's
right to refuse, right?
Like, well, shoot, righttorefuse.org. Yeah, go there and blow your mind. Like, whoa. There's several states that have already passed legislation that gives you the right to refuse, and there's only 5 that haven't even started. But the other ones, my gosh, 45 states have already introduced bills like this. Get behind them and push. And if we have to leverage courts, if you have to bring a lawsuit, sue somebody by name. That's not just the school. Sue the superintendent by name. Sue whoever the heck you want to. There is a unsettling feeling when you get hit with a lawsuit that can get people to back down. There's a professor that just got his job back because he was allowed to have his recovery from COVID count as his proof that he doesn't need the vaccine. With George Mason University, they backed down and said, okay, you can still keep your job. But sometimes you just bring a lawsuit. You put the fear of God in someone with their name on a lawsuit, and nobody wants to be in that position. But sometimes we have got to get contentious and go leverage the courts that way. So Yeah. There you have those.
Jury's seen improving, too. You actually did. Yeah. We got about 90 seconds left. Yeah. And the juries, we have a bill that's a mandatory instruction to juries. They can judge not only the facts of a case, but the laws as well, because the juries are representatives of the people and are superior to the judge who represents the government. So we got a bunch of stuff to talk about. You know, feel free in the next little while, go through some of the bills that we have, because what I want to do is give a mechanism, a purpose, a method to all these groups that want to. I mean, the energy's there. We know that. The energy is there to fix our country. The tyrants have gone so far, and they've woken up the masses. The masses are like, I don't want to live with this, you know, but they don't know quite what to do or how to. They want to be active, but I figure that action, this is the perfect time for Action Radio, because we can say, okay, let's actually write the legislation we consent to be governed by, get that to every, you know, legislature from Congress to local government, and let's see what happens from there. Let's try this out. Let's show how simple it is to write really good legislation that these idiots in Congress, they're too busy fundraising, they're sucking up to their donors. They can never correct the situation because they're owned by the deep state, by the corrupt tyrants. Mm-hmm. And what we're saying is the people are far more powerful than the corrupt tyrants if we just get a little bit more organized and have the mechanism to do something about our problems. The organization is happening. I just hope it will be the mechanism. And with that,
I know you're going to be part of the solution.
Sounds good to me. Wow. Hey, thanks for coming on the show. We actually ran out of time. That's going to be the fastest hour I think we've ever been through. Christian Elliott, thank you, sir, so much. I'll give you 1 second to give a plug for websites, emails, anything like that.
Oh, yeah. If you want to keep up with me, you can go to truewholehuman.com and see our coaching program, or my blog that seems to have gotten a lot of attention is deconstructingconventional.com.
Here we go. Thank you, sir. Let's do it again soon after we've talked about some bills and things. This is great. All right. We got to go.
All right.
Thanks, Christian. Great. And thanks to Gene and Josie and Dr. Pry and Bianchi who called in. Gene, what's the last word? We're actually out of time.
Have a great day.
Have a good one. Thanks, Gene. Greg Penglis for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Back tomorrow at 7 o'clock in the morning Central. Mm-hmm.